When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hey, did you know that the Torture Pod has merch? Yeah, over at redbubble.com/people/torturepod, we have a whole bunch of different items that you can wear, adorn on your phone or your computer or your car to show your love for torture. We have Brazen Bull t-shirts. You can have the torture logo on a mug. Guild Array on Hat Day on a hat, if that's what you choose. Welcome to La Tumba shower curtains. I mean, literally, anything you want. iPhone cases with sort your fucking life out on them. I mean, how much better does it get? And remember, all Pride merch sold, profits go directly to the Trevor Project. So you're also helping people in the process of showing your love for the podcast. Just go to redbubble.com/people/torturepod. And as all the kids these days say, get your fit on, bro. I don't know if that's what they say or not. I'm not cool. The subject of this episode will be the dealings with the threats to the throne, both real and imagined, the loss of a child, the murder of a wife, the creation of a new boy wife, a city destroying fire which will lead to the persecution of a small sect of really weird people, his growing debauchery, his giant vanity project, and a trip to Greece before people finally stand up and say, enough is enough, and the tyrant emperor is finally brought down. But not before making a whole thing of it. On our second and final episode of Nero. I'm Kevin Young.
And I'm Sarah Koenig from the hit podcast Serial.
I don't know if I can put that. We might get sued.
I am not Sarah Koenig from the hit podcast
Serial. And this is Shit Town. I wish. Oh, fuck.
We're fans, Sarah. Don't sue us.
Please don't sue us. We do it out of love because the first season of Serial and Shit Town are amazing.
I liked the series of Serial, too. Obviously
the
not.
Second season was. I haven't gone past, but the first one is. I mean,
yeah,
it's one of like the standard bearers of what podcasts should be. True crime.
It's up there
anyway
with the Feel Better podcast. Yeah.
Yes, neck and neck.
Yeah, I can't believe it's not better. That's what I told
How
him.
How has he not used that yet?
I've told him that before. I've sent him a picture of I can't believe it's not butter, and I put his face on it, and I changed it to better. Right? I even said better bought a bit of butter to him. And he still hasn't fucking used it. That's going back a few years now, and he still hasn't used it. And I'm so disappointed in him.
Oh, God damn it. God, Phil, come on, man. You're a master at this type of stuff. How can you? Maybe it's just too. Maybe it's too low hanging fruit for him. Maybe he's too highbrow.
He's Canadian. Like, come on.
Come on.
Nothing's beneath him.
We are. No, technically.
That's true. Yeah. True. Yeah. He's very, 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 very busy man. So he is. He had so many interviews last week. He forgot who they all were.
Yeah.
On the day.
And
he's like, I just interviewed somebody. Yeah. I can't remember who they were, but it's
great. Well, he does the smart thing is he like batches them. He does, he gets shit done all kind of at once. And then go listen to the Phil Better podcast, invest in yourself and all that, our good friend Phil.
Phil's a good man, yeah.
If you were looking to get into podcasting or you're looking to make some money off content creation and all that, go listen to Phil.
I'd love to just randomly call him during one of the episodes here. Just be like, Phil, you're now officially an unofficial special guest today. Hey, buddy!
We'll have to do it when we're covering something maybe even darker and more painful, because he is just the most squeamish motherfucker.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
You can't talk about anything with him.
Unless he's the one doing the squeamish things in D&D.
You're telling me they cut these people's feet off? Yeah, Dan. Phil, that's what the podcast's about.
Yeah, coming from the guy who used the troll's severed troll's penis as a salt shaker.
Yes.
You know. God.
Oh, hell. Anyway, how you doing, Dan? What's going on?
Good, good, good. All good. And you?
Oh, you know, just living the dream. Saw Superman while we've been out. I loved it. Saw Jurassic World. It was okay.
That's kind of what I expected.
Yeah. It's a, oh my God, dinosaurs. And then everything's okay. Yeah. And then, oh my God, dinosaurs. And everything's okay. It's got some of the freakiest fucking dinosaurs that they could create that obviously did not exist, because it takes place on a experimental island and all this shit. I'm not going to give too much away, but.
How many islands do they have? That's what I wanted to know.
There's island. There's Jurassic Islands all over the place. Apparently,
like it was in Indonesia or something like that, isn't it? Like they're just like, hey, it's all many islands as possible.
Everything's on the equator. Yeah, everything's on the equator, and they explain that in the movie. So, I'm not saying don't go. I would go see it, but Superman, I would say see in theaters. It's definitely worth it. Jurassic World, you could probably wait for it to go home. Either way. I've had that fucking I'm a punk rocker song, punk rocker from Iggy Pop, stuck in my head for the past week.
Yeah.
I can't get away. I've listened to it a few times. I can't get away from it. So it's a really fun song. And it's a James Gunn movie, so that's the type of music that's all through Superman. I had a really good time watching it. My wife didn't like it near as much as I did, but I had a really good time watching it. So
I'll watch it at some stage.
Yeah,
never been a big fan to warrant going to see in the cinema. Though,
I'm not a Superman fan at all. He's one of my least favorite superheroes because he's the fucking Boy Scout, and he's the so overpowered that like a rock can take him out. But that's it, whatever. It's probably the reason.
His one weakness,
like
Dwayne Johnson.
A glowing green Dwayne Johnson. But I've never been a Superman fan. He's just never been an allure to me. But they did Superman, I think, really well in this one. They made him relatable. And David, what was it, Cornsweet or Cornsweet or whatever his name is, does a fucking phenomenal job. So go see Superman if you got nothing else to do and you want to. Good.
It's
2 hours Dave, or
it's
so.
David McCorn's wet.
That's what it is.
Poor David. His corn is saturated.
That's all right.
I like Smallville, all right, but that's about the only, and it wasn't even that amazing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It was enjoyable. It was a good idea.
I think you would have fun with this. You know, you probably wouldn't. It's not like top tier Marvel for me. It's mid tier Marvel, but it's definitely a James Gunn movie. So if you like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies and stuff, you'll probably, and Peacemaker. If you like Peacemaker, you'll like this, I think. And Peacemaker is fucking phenomenal.
Do you really want to taste it?
Yeah, it's that same kind of. The humor isn't as graphic and as dark as Peacemaker, but Superman's not Peacemaker. You know,
yeah.
Two completely. Peacemaker. Nah, never mind. I'm not gonna say anything. never mind. Anyway, we got a lot of shit to get to, so
let's do it.
I can't think of anything. Yeah, I can't think of anything else to talk about. So let's just get right into the horribleness, which is Nero. Now, in the last
torture.
Nero. Oh, yeah, torture. Yeah. I forgot. When we last spoke, we talked about how Tigellinus had helped change the court to a culture of paranoia, conspiracy, and insinuation, a culture where anyone that may possibly pose a threat was dealt with. Take Rubulus Plautus, a member of the Roman nobility and one of the few surviving men with direct Julian blood. The great-grands... I thought of that the entire time.
Yeah, so did I, and I was fuming that I used it on a previous one as opposed to this.
Yeah.
You know, because when I was sitting earlier, I was like, I might say biggest diggers. My intro, I was like, no, think of something else, because you already used it. And then I forgot what I had already thinking of, and I saw cereal sitting there. So
that's fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's fair enough. Well, I mean, this does take you know, place 30 some odd years after the, you know, quote unquote death of Jesus. So I mean, it is that right time period.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So the great grandson of Augustus, which made him a potential alternative to Nero in the eyes of those who desired a return to Julian legitimacy. He was not politically active and had no ambitions to seize power, and had remained relatively quiet during Nero's early reign. However, his very existence posed a threat. He was accused of anonymous informers, I can get the sentence out eventually, of having ambitions for the throne. The evidence was vague, possibly rumors of astrology, political conversations, or casual remarks, but enough to trigger Nero's suspicion. And rather than executing him immediately, Nero chose to exile him to Asia under the pretense of leniency. I'm going to send you to Asia, distant cousin of mine. Why? To be lenient. For what? I didn't fucking do anything. Just imagine
a Nintendo Entertainment System over there. You want to be first in.
Just imagine your long distant relative showing up at your house being like, you need to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Why? Well, yeah, you're moving
me under.
You know.
That'd be really fucking funny if that happened. It's one of my cousins knocking on the door. Hey, get out.
Get out of here. Now, this allowed Nero to appear moderate while keeping a dangerous man out of Rome. Now, he lived modestly and prudently in exile, avoiding contact with anyone who might entangle him in conspiracy, doing exactly what you would want to do if your ruler distant cousin is saying, I will, you know, leave or I'll kill you. You're like, okay. And you go to Asia and you're just like living a, you know, humble little life, just going and, you know, getting your Dunkin' Donuts coffee every morning or whatever, and just living a happy little life. You know, his noble ancestry, however,
urge to make jokes and speaking.
Don't go for it. Go ahead.
No, it'll be canceled.
as his noble ancestry and clean reputation meant that his name was still whispered among those ready to be done with Nero, and so he remained a threat in Nero's eyes. So in 62 AD, with a little convincing from Tigellinus, Nero sent a centurion to Asia to assassinate Plautus. And with no trial, defense, or justification, the soldier returned with Plautus's head. Not the rest of them. The rest of them stayed in Asia.
How has Quentin Tarantino not written an alternate version of this where he sends Plautus to Asia? Plautus becomes a ninja. Or like a samurai or some shit.
Yeah.
And they go and they try and assassinate him, and John Wick's everybody. And it comes back. You know, and next
you know what I'm
like the first samurai emperor of Rome.
You know
that's
what
a movie
surprised.
Right there, Quentin.
Oh, you know what I'm surprised Quentin Tarantino hasn't done a movie on yet? Because he's big on the alternate history movies.
Yeah.
The Assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I just, the other week, finished the series from last podcast on the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and what he could do with Booth and Abraham Lincoln. I mean, instead of Booth fucking shooting Abraham Lincoln, Lincoln could, like, stand up, grab him, and throw him off the balcony and snap his neck. I mean, he could do so many. I think an Assassination of Abraham Lincoln movie by Quentin Tarantino would be fucking amazing.
Where do you fit defeat into it, though? That's the problem.
Abraham Lincoln's big old floppy feet. Pops off his shoes, puts him on the edge of the balcony while he's watching My American Cousin.
You need to roll for Christopher Waltz thrown in there as well.
Yeah.
He has to stick with
his
tried
and
tested.
Booth. I don't know.
Leonardo DiCaprio as Abraham Lincoln. And then
you bring back Daniel Day-Lewis. You bring back Daniel Day-Lewis to do the most serious Abraham Lincoln to ever throw John Wilkes Booth off of a balcony.
Brilliant.
Now then there was Faustus Cornelius Sulla Felix. I feel like I'm saying a lot of every time. Yes. A descendant of the dictator Lucius Cornelius Sulla and husband to Claudia Antonia, the daughter of Claudius from one of his first two marriages. He also posed a threat through Julian lineage to Nero's throne. So in 62 AD, with again no evidence of treasonous behavior, no trial or even any accusations, Faustus was executed. That's a theme. Just imagine in your head that it continues on that way for the next few years.
Poison.
Like, this person's related to me? Kill him.
Poison.
Is this person related to me? Oh, how you doing? Kill him. Now, in January of 63 AD, Poppaea gave birth to the only child she would give Nero, a daughter named Claudia Augusta. Claudia is a very popular name for females this time, apparently. Her birth was celebrated through Rome. Despite being female, she represented the possibility of a legitimate Julio-Claudian heir. Coins were minted in her honor. Dedications were made across the empire. Unfortunately, like what happens with many babies in this time of the world, the baby died in May or June from illness. The two parents, along with Rome itself, mourned the loss. Now, this meant Nero was again without an heir, and it put immense pressure on Poppaea to conceive again. I don't know how much this really affects Nero's mental stability. Losing a child is incredibly difficult and affects everybody differently, obviously. I don't know if he was already that far gone to where it doesn't really matter, or if it kind of pushed him over the edge, but...
later that night.
No, we'll not quite
everything.
But, speaking of which, the most famous event to happen in Nero's rule began on July 18th, 64 AD, at the shops near the Circus Maximus. Remember some of the places I tell you here for the next minute or so.
I mean,
the shops near Circus. Yes, that's. I believe that's what it means. Maximum Circus. It's like a Stephen King novel.
Maximum
Circus.
That's like a one of the most movie.
One of the most densely populated areas in the city, packed with wooden buildings, market stalls, and narrow, winding alleyways. The hot summer sun beating down on the citizens of Rome, while a warm, albeit strong, wind blows through the city. A spark. No one knows for sure how it started, or where it came from, or who, if anyone, was to blame, but a spark was lit in one of the most flammable areas of Rome. And I'm not talking figuratively like a spark of derision or revolution. I mean an actual spark that would quickly engulf the entire district in flame.
Obviously, the samurai emperor sitting there having a cigarette, looking all cool. Slow motion.
He puts on his sunglasses. Yeah!
Yeah.
All of Rome explodes.
Walks off, not looking conspicuous at all, in his giant samurai hat and robe with his sword, strong true town.
Says something cool in Italian or Latin or whatever that we don't understand.
Be Japanese at that stage.
It might be Japanese, yeah. Now, the fire leaping from building to building before any coordinated effort could contain it, Rome, for all its glory and technology, lacked an effective firefighting infrastructure, mostly just watchmen with buckets and axes. Buildings collapsed, and panic among the citizens further hindered any organized response. Looting and chaos added to the confusion. Over the course of the next 6 days, residential districts, temples, and public buildings all burned to the ground, ravaging more than half of the city's 14 districts. But after this destruction, the fire was finally brought under control, possibly burning itself out. Then, as by some cruel twist of fate, the fire reignited itself in a different part of the city, the Esquiline Hill. It burned for 3 more days. In all, 80 to 90% of the city was hit by the fire. Now, there's always been the saying that Nero played the fiddle as he watched Rome burn, or that he watched the fire from his private stage at the gardens and sang about the burning of Troy, dressed in theatrical costumes. But these stories are almost completely made up. By all reports, Nero was conveniently at his villa in Antium when the fire broke out, but returned quickly when the extent of the damage became known. Hundreds dead, thousands homeless. And Nero acted decisively and generously after the fire, organizing relief efforts, opening his own gardens and palaces to the homeless, arranging for food supplies and shelter, launching an ambitious reconstruction project with wider streets, height restrictions on buildings, fireproof construction material. Which all sounds great. Until you ask the question, how did it start to begin with? It wasn't long before the rumors began to swirl that it had all been started deliberately. Eyewitnesses who, in all honesty, can't always or even most of the time be trusted completely, reported seeing men throwing torches into houses, and some guards were said to have threatened anyone who tried to extinguish the flames. And the fact that the first 6 days of the fire didn't do the entire city in, but then the next 3 days after it started back up did, well, this gave rise to the theory that someone in authority wanted the city to burn. And even though there was still no direct evidence linking Nero to the fire's origin, there is some circumstantial evidence, which we've seen people go to jail, prison, circumstantial evidence all the time. Listen to a true crime podcast.
They found his one-of-one custom Zippo sitting amongst them.
Just says near bro on it.
Yeah. Love, like, brotho.
Love, brotho. How's my wife? He had talked about wanting to clear out the slums and open space for public gardens and palaces and construct new monumental architecture, expressing a desire to redesign Rome entirely. It was his guard that were allegedly keeping people from putting out the flames. He just happened to be out of the city when it all started. Not to mention that his approval numbers were pretty much at ground level, and being the emperor that came to the rescue of so many in their time of need could really help get him more support from the people. And then there was the Domus Aurea, or Golden House, a vast private palace complex stretching from the Palatine, which is right next to the Circus Maximus. It would stretch to the Esquiline Hills, where the second fire reignited. Coincidence? What? Oh. Now, this was a project he had wanted to do allegedly for a long time. Give himself a palace that stretched over 123 acres of Roman land. That's a big fucking palace. Including up to 300 rooms, manicured gardens, private bath complex, an artificial lake, a rotating dining room, and gilded architecture. The labyrinth
this
frescoes.
Donald Trump. Yeah.
Liberace. Elaborate frescoes, mosaics, and sculptures. And according to ancient historians, one of its halls had a rotating ceiling that scattered perfumes and flower petals on guests. I can't even imagine how in 63 AD any of that is possible.
You sprayed open your face as you walked in. You talked, the room was spinning. That's all it was.
That's a possibility. Eat these mushrooms.
Yeah.
Lights.
Yeah, look up.
Lick this toad, hypno toad. He even had a bronze statue of himself as Saul, the sun god, at its entrance called the Colossus of Nero. And he couldn't quite do all that with the shops and houses already there. Not without massive pushback or possible riots. But if the land was devastated by fire, well, then he could just seize a large portion of the burned city. And this would fuel further suspicion that not only was he benefiting from the disaster, but possibly even started it. Now, Nero obviously felt the suspicion and hostility growing towards him, so he did what any great leader does. Found a scapegoat.
I was going to say, yeah, shift the blame.
Shift the blame. I know you all think I had something to do with this, but it was them! Get him! Yeah. Kill! Kill!
I know this great guy. Yeah. Really, really great guy. Yeah. Great guy. It was him. We had the best fires.
Exactly. With some bad men, it was the Jews. With others, it's the Mexicans. For Nero, it was the Christians, a, at the time, small, unpopular, and poorly understood sect in Rome. I wish most of that was still true for the Christians.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic.
It's not the world we live
in. Now, they're the ones with the 100-and-something-acre palace. That's
yeah,
its own country.
All over the place. They are everywhere. He accused them of arson with no evidence and began the first state-sponsored persecution of Christians in Roman history. The Christians, to most Rome. You know, I don't like a lot of what he did, but he's persecuting those Christians, so he's got my vote.
Yeah, he's doing a damn good job of it, too. Didn't do
Nero,
2028.
Vice I mean, President Brozo. Who we got now. He's already there. Now, the Christians, to most Romans, seemed like a radical offshoot of Judaism, known for their secret meetings, refusal to participate in Roman religious rites, and the worship of a crucified criminal. Who the fuck does that sound like? Of course, the criminal they worship now hasn't been crucified yet, but, you know, you can always crush fingers. They didn't honor the emperor as divine and refused to take part in sacrifices to the gods, which marked them as dangerous atheists and enemies of the state. And this all made them the perfect target. So Nero seized the opportunity, accusing them of deliberately setting the fire, and Christians would be arrested on the spot en masse, tortured into confessing with whips, burning, branding, crushing, mutilation, psychological torment like threatening families or executing victims in front of one another. They were forced to name others, leading to a wave of executions. Wave of executions! All I can think of is wave of the future! Anytime I say wave of anything. Brutal and staged for public entertainment, Christians were crucified, torn apart by dogs after being dressed in animal skins, and even burned alive at night and used as human torches to light Nero's gardens. It's so peaceful out tonight. Oh my God! I mean, just look, listen to the birds. Oh, it hurts so bad! And the crickets. Oh my God! I mean, using live burning bodies to light your gardens can't be very peaceful. I mean, I guess no. For Nero it might have been. It can't be very peaceful with all the screaming.
Oh, so you imagine like the neighbors. Like, well, he's having a barbecue again.
Oh God, Nero. Jeez. He's lighting the torches. He's out in his garden again.
He's like your man and 28 years later. Just fucking piling up corpses.
Ah, the smell. But they weren't thrown to the lions in the Colosseum, because the Colosseum hadn't even been built yet. Consequently enough, the Colosseum, where it sits, is actually inside the artificial lake that used to be in the Domus Aurora.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You imagine just building the Colosseum and be like, where'd you get this land? This all used to be lake property. And we're just going to put the Colosseum there. This is an artificial lake. This was a man-made lake. We just filled it. We backfilled it. Going to put the Colosseum right there. Now, contrary to popular belief, if you were to watch shows like Spartacus or movies like Gladiator, not every person in this time loved to see other human beings be horribly murdered and torn apart. Yes, most Romans disliked the Christians, but they were still horrified by the brutality of Nero's punishment. And even though many still felt like the Christians were guilty, quote, a feeling of pity arose because the treatments were so excessive and inhumane. And instead of rebuilding his reputation as a leader, he simply added to his image as a monster. As well did his growing debauchery. Now we're going to get into some freaky stuff. Freaky stuff. Now, Nero supposedly hosted lavish boat parties on the Tiber River where the banks were lined with brothels and taverns, floating banquets on gilded barges with dancers, musicians, and prostitutes of both sexes performing. These parties include mock rapes, group sex, and public nudity, all framed as artistic or Dionysian rituals. I'm good with everything but the mock rape. I don't know why that has to fit in there. Raper, but not really. But but not just really.
Just pretend.
Like, do this, but don't actually do it.
Yeah.
Is it okay if he does this to you? It doesn't matter. Is it okay if he does this to you? Now, during his plays at the palace, he would perform scenes that mimicked real torture or abuse, sometimes forcing high-born Romans to act with him, including women who had been threatened or blackmailed. In one performance, Nero is said to have played a raped maiden or a bound prisoner, exaggerating his moans and gestures for effect. I mean,
that's a show I'm glad I didn't see.
Emperor, we need to get somebody to play this woman who was just raped. I'll do it.
This is my burden to bear.
The story must be told. But before we can, finally,
a role I was born to play.
before I can act it out, I have to first get into character. You, biggest dickus, to my trailer.
I'm a method actor, after all.
I learned that from Daniel Day-Lewis. Ancient historian Suetonius, or Sweaty Tony, as we covered.
Sweaty Tony.
Sweaty Tony.
Where's Johnny Titus?
They are Italian. Claims Nero had people sexually assaulted for pleasure or punishment, including nobles and slaves. One notorious story says he dressed in animal skins and was released into the imperial gardens, where men and women tied to stakes were raped and mutilated by him or others as part of a game. There's another thing that I read that put it a different way. It said that he would dress in animal skins and go up to the people's groins and maul them.
I thought you were going to say sniff them, but... Okay.
I mean, he probably did a little bit of that too. But no, he would go, he would just go to town on these people's genitals with
cool
hands, blade, penis, whatever. I mean, he would just tear them apart.
Go to town on her genitals with his penis. How about you?
Flopping around. How does this work? Hello. Mommy's not here to show me anymore. Another tale described Nero murdering a boy, then remarking that he, quote, smelled like a wild beast. It's like, imagine he just does that in front of a group of people. He's like, smelled like a wild beast. And everybody's like, yeah, sure, dude.
Yeah.
you just killed a kid. But sure, whatever. And apparently at some point...
Why didn't we vote Democratic? God damn it.
I mean, this is ridiculous, but did you see all the flowers falling from the ceiling in the hallway? It's amazing. Apparently, at some point, Nero reportedly married a freedman named Dorfrus. You wish it was just David. I wish it was just David. Dorifurus, there's a Y in there, Dorifurus, this time playing the bride. Nero is said to have worn a bridal veil, been given away like a daughter, and consummated the marriage as the passive partner, a position deeply shameful in Roman culture. Pretty much as he married a guy and then had him butt fuck him on their wedding night. It's pretty much the basis of what I'm getting. If I put it down to brass tacks, he pretty much got butt fucked by some freedman after they did played wedding.
That's what he's into.
Yeah, if that's what you're into, that's fine.
It's the burning corpses and
yeah,
general
mutilation
I've issue with.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're gay married now. That's cool. Could you stop killing people?
Yeah.
Nope, can't have one without the other. Well, that's a shame. Now there was time...
Sorry, I can't hear you all 123 acres away from you peasants complaining about my behavior.
Just sees at one end of the palace, and somebody else is at the other. What? Hold on! And it takes a few minutes to walk to one another. This better be good. I came all the way from the bathroom for this. Now, it was time for someone to do something about it. Enter Senator Gaius Calpurnius Piso, a wealthy senator of noble birth, known for his eloquence, popularity, and generosity. Now, Piso was not a revolutionary in temperament. He was, in many ways, a traditional aristocrat who had once thrived under earlier emperors. But by 65 A.D., Nero's behavior, especially his obsession with artistic performance, his reckless spending, the Domus Aurea, and the Great Fire, and his escalating cruelty, had made him intolerable to a wide spectrum of Rome's political class. So along with other senators, equestrians, military officers, poets, philosophers, and members of Nero's own house, a plan to put down the emperor was formed. They decided that either during a public performance or while he traveled between his palace and the theater, Fannius Rufus, the co-prefect of the Praetorian Guard, who had been pretty much pushed out of the position by Tigellinus, would assassinate Nero. Then Piso would be declared the new emperor. Some of the versions of the plot also included taking out Tigellinus and a few other loyalists. Unfortunately, before the plan could move forward, a freedman named Milicus overheard the plan and informed Tigellinus, hoping for a reward. Tigellinus moved quickly, arresting and interrogating those that had been ratted out.
He totally ratted out the Judean People's Front, son of a bitch.
But not the People's Front of Judea.
Ah, oh,
they're over
okay.
there.
Yeah.
They're over there. Splatter! Now, under torture and fear, suspects began to confess and name others, some involved, some not. Dozens were implicated. Piso himself was arrested and ordered to commit suicide. It was our crucifixion episode that you did the bits with. So that fit just as well as it would here.
Please tell me that guy's name. That guy Piso's his surname was Cake, because that would be fucking amazing.
Piso Cake.
Yeah.
It's going to be easy. It's going to be, and then it just shoots to a picture of him. Dozens were implicated. Piso himself was arrested and ordered to commit suicide. For the next few months, Nero lost an aggressive...
No, do it. No, I don't want to. But we can't do it. See, we're at an impasse
here, gentlemen.
You won't
convince me to do it. I think I'm going to convince you to do it. For the next few months, Nero launched an aggressive purge against anyone linked to Piso, including Nero's old mentor and moral compass, Seneca. He was forced, like Piso, to commit suicide. Seneca's nephew, Lucan, who had apparently betrayed his own mother to save his life, was also put to death. Not near as sad about that. If you're going to throw your mom under the bus, then, yeah, I mean, maybe you get what's coming to you.
He threw under the chariot, Kevin. They didn't have buses back then. Fair enough. That was the same back then.
He just threw me right under the chariot, right under the horse's hooves. I don't know what to tell you. Motherfucker, damn bastard. If my son wasn't also my brother and my uncle at the same time, I'd be super mad at him.
Oh, goddamn inbreds. It's kind of funny when you think about it, like this whole thing of like the Roman Empire and all that shit's supposed to be one of the greatest things outside of the Greek society in terms of everything, and yet they're all hillbillies.
They're all fucking
rednecks. You know what I mean? Like they
just wake up.
Like they pretty much invented NASCAR. Their chariot races going around their little ovals and stuff. You know,
it's true.
Yeah. So
left turns only.
NASA chariot. That's what it is.
NASA chariot.
There'd be NAR chariot. And I mean,
NAR chariot.
North American, isn't it? So NAR chariot. NAS char. Just be char for short. NAS char.
Char. That sounds like a Jamaican religion. NAR Ras char. I'm Ras char.
Pokemon. It's NAS char. Nashar, I choose you. You're Nashar.
It's just the rest of the podcast. It's just you and me going, Nashar. Fucking Christ.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard-of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Let thebeardstruggle.com cream all over your beard.
What?
With the Beard Struggle's all new beard cream.
Oh, thank God.
Now everybody
can get nice and creamy.
I think what he means to say is that with ingredients like glycerin and shea butter, avocado, and jojoba oils, it's perfect for everyone, anytime.
Night, day, hot, cold. You're going to get that cream.
Okay. And hyaluronic acid ensures deep hydration without the grease for a long beard or just some scruff.
Creamy scruff without the grease.
Dude, gotta stop. And as always, use our exclusive discount code TORTURE19 and take up to 19% off at checkout.
Getting creamy and taking it off.
Okay, we need to end this. TheBeardStruggle.com. Do what's right for your beard. Do what's right for your face.
Sort your sexy, creamy fucking beard out.
Oh, boy. A courtier known as Petronius was denounced and took his own life after writing a scathing satire of Nero, which he left behind as a parting insult. Rufus, the co-prefect, was executed, leaving Tigellinus truly alone to lead the guard. And Subrius Flavius, one of the most vocal conspirators, was executed after condemning Nero to his face, declaring he had became a chariot-driving actor. And everybody in the crowd went, ooh, sick burn! Yeah. Did you hear what he just said? Fuck yeah! And your mama!
That's it. You just call him a truck-driving redneck. Well,
you know. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Your mama only took right turns. Ha-ha. Yeah. Boom! Zing! Got him!
Yo, mama's so fat!
That's my...
That's
your mama.
Mama,
hey, that's my sister. You're
so overweight.
That's my sister you're talking about. Yeah.
And my aunt.
And my aunt. And my daughter. Now, this conspiracy unleashed a new wave of informers operating freely under Nero and Tigellinus. Anyone could be accused of disloyalty. Trials would be based on rumor, jealousy, or revenge. The Senate was emasculated and elite families stopped speaking openly, avoiding public office, or simply fled from Rome altogether. This also led to Nero becoming even more paranoid and delusional. He had fits of temper and violence. And when an insecure man has fits of temper and violence, the person that normally takes the brunt is usually the wife. Now, this was no different for Nero and Poppaea. Yeah. That summer, after the conspiracy came to light, either in a fit of rage or during an argument, sources are torn, Nero allegedly began kicking a pregnant Poppaea over and over again in the abdomen until she died.
Classic Nero.
Nero obviously played it off as an accident, even giving her a lavish funeral and deifying her as Diva Poppaea. There is evidence that Nero actually felt a sort of grief or guilt over the loss of his wife as he went to extreme lengths to recreate her presence. This is something just the worst types of people that just do horrible, stupid things, and then they're like, I'm so sorry. I didn't need you. I can't believe I did that. Oh, everybody feel bad for me for what I did.
What's the other one? I'm going to have to try and find it. Where is it? It just reminded me of the Simpsons. Homer makes Marge out of the tree.
Oh, yeah. And, the plant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought of as soon as you try to recreate her presence. It's like a paper plate with her face drawn on it. Stuck in a bush.
Yeah.
Anyone's already started kicking
man.
The tree.
If only Nero had gone the way of Homer Simpson He goes a much more disturbing route.
I've created a replacement that's superior to her in almost every way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he recreates Poppaea. Enter Sporus, most likely a stage or nickname for a 13 to 16-year-old boy, most likely a slave or freed slave, probably Greek. He was noticed by Nero for his soft, feminine features and his striking resemblance to Poppaea. The resemblance seemed to have triggered something in Nero, leading him to take Sporus into his home as a living replacement for his dead wife. Oh, you look so much like my wife that I just feel like I should tell you to get the fuck in the kitchen and make me a sandwich. Yeah. Cut the crust off. My mom didn't cut the crust off, and now you see what happened to her. Cut the fucking crust off.
Triangles, motherfucker. Sophisticated household. Only triangles.
Only triangles in this house. Going as far as having the boy wear her clothes, adorn her jewelry, styling his hair and makeup like hers, engaging in public displays of affection. Having him forcibly castrated.
Wow.
You would be my wife. You look just like her, so you will live with me and then act like you are my wife. Okay, well, how far are we taking this?
Your penis is bigger than mine, so get rid of it.
It's like, how far are we taking this? Yeah, you'll see. I mean, I would just do my hair up, put on some makeup. That's going to be part of it. I mean, who are the doctors? What are they here for?
Oh, the gardeners. They're not the doctors, they're the gardeners.
You know, have some people like with belly buttons, some people have an outie and have some people have an innie. Well, we're going to turn your outie into an innie. They even went as far as having a mock wedding ceremony. To most Romans, this was disturbing, proving to most that Nero lived in a fantasy world of his own making. It's like the castrating is fine, but a fake wedding ceremony, please.
He's already had three of those.
This is Rome. How many wedding ceremonies can you have? Last fake wedding ceremony he had, he was the bride. Now, even though Nero had a new wife, that didn't mean he didn't still want another one. And as we should know by now, that just because a woman is married doesn't mean she's off the table. So Marcus Virilius Vestinus was a wealthy and distinguished man who served as consul. He just so happened to be married to an elegant and beautiful noblewoman of high rank named Statilia Messalina. So without any real justification, Nero forced Marcus to kill himself. Like, hey, you, kill yourself. Why? Yeah. Your wife is hot. That's pretty much all it was. I looked everywhere. I was like, what justification did he have? Why did he have him do this? Was it a treason or something? I couldn't find anything. It was just another one of those. Yeah, he just wanted him to kill himself, so he forced him to kill himself and took his wife. I mean, all right. Now, once he was dead, I don't feel like we're that far away from that happening here. I really don't.
Well, a certain somebody would get their son-in-law to kill themselves to marry their wife.
So he could,
if you get one, and then
I get what you're saying, and it all becomes Rome all over again.
Yeah.
Now, once he was dead, Nero married Statilia. After they were married, Nero pretty much forgot about her. She was mostly there to give Nero legitimacy. She was a member of the Claudian family line, but she would hold no apparent political influence, never played a role in the court. She served almost completely as a trophy wife, which is probably the best thing that could possibly happen. I'm going to marry you, and she's probably terrified. It's like, okay, now get. Wedding's over, get. And she's like, oh, thank the gods.
I already have my little boy wife over here.
Yeah, exactly. Sporus, he saw Sporus as his real wife. And he/she went everywhere with him, including Greece. So in 66 AD, Nero decides he really wants to lean into this whole artist and actor thing. And he decides to go on a grand tour of Greece. He frames it as a cultural pilgrimage when it was really just a massive please love me campaign. Hello, Greece! Aren't I great? And everybody's like, fuck you. He's like, no. He's like, Mr. B, they lift their middle fingers towards me, and he's just up there going, yes, hello!
It must be how you say hello in Greek.
Yeah. He participated in all the major Greek festivals and competitions, including the Olympian, Pythian, Isthmian, and Nemean games, usually held at different times. Nero had them reschedule to all occur during his visit, a massive violation of sacred tradition. At each event, Nero performed as a singer, lyre player, and sometimes actor. And he even, in some cases, competed in chariot races despite having little skill.
Yes, sir.
So what are these? World these are the horse things you keep talking about? Yeah, and it just goes backwards.
Damn thing stuck in reverse.
What's that smell? It's shit. Do they do that often? Yes. They do it all the time.
I think it's funny the way he's going over for basically a look me, I'm amazing tour, and immediately pisses on their traditions.
Yeah.
Very first thing he does.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, literally, he's like, you know how you do all this and have been doing all this for like a few centuries now? How about this? How about you change it?
Yeah.
And you do it my way. How about all this tradition that you have? How about you just knock it off? How about that? That doesn't work for me. I don't like it.
Terrible human being.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Unsurprisingly, he won every competition. Not because of talent, but because no judge would dare risk offending him. Nero traveled with an entourage of supporters who ensured victory by bribery, intimidation, or imperial decree. Kind of like when Trump goes golfing and he hits one out to the lake and then somebody else just takes the ball and throws it out. Be like, good shot, sir.
Yeah. Did you see that one? Yeah, when he missed the ball completely and faked that he had hit it and he picked the ball up and put it in his pocket.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the type of thing. Yeah, that's the type of thing these people do.
God.
He lost that chariot race, so he picked up the chariot and he put it in his pocket. He's like, hey, I won. I went so fast, don't even say it anymore.
And the first nurse chair champion. Let's go.
He was awarded thousands of crowns and statues, all of which were shipped back to Rome for display. These performances were not only tolerated by his inner circle, they were celebrated as religious acts, with Nero now styling himself as Apollo incarnate, god of music and light. No longer playing the role of a god, but actually seeing himself as one, having statues of himself erected in the likeness of Apollo and Dionysus. Which is, I mean, again, I don't feel like we're that far away from that shit happening, from just having a big gold Trump god statue in the middle of New York City.
Or in the middle of the White House lawn.
Or in the middle of the White House lawn.
That'd be so funny if he digs into the rose garden and just puts a big giant fucking thing of himself.
Right next to the UFC ring that he's going to have built for the whatever UFC thing they end up doing there, because it's just fucking ridiculous at this point. Now, by the time he returned to Rome, he had collected over 1,800 victories in musical and athletic contests, entering the city in Greek robes and a golden crown, staging an elaborate procession through Rome, humiliating the aristocracy, forcing senators to attend recitals and games, and anyone that failed to show the proper enthusiasm could be exiled or killed. Just imagine, you're just having a bad day, And you're like, yeah, whatever. Kill that man. I mean, come on. Now, while Nero had been gallivanting around Greece, celebrating himself, his relationships with those he needed had almost completely disintegrated. The military, especially his own guard, no longer trusted him. His increased use of the Praetorian as political executioners began to alienate career officers and commanders, planting seeds of revolt, particularly with the death of Gnaeus Domitius Corbulo, the empire's most respected general. Now, Corbulo had earned great acclaim for his military campaigns in Armenia, where he had successfully negotiated a settlement with the Parthians and restored Roman prestige in the east. Despite his popularity with the army and his undeniable competence, Corbulo remained loyal to Nero, even as other generals plotted rebellion. His daughter had even married Nero's cousin, further entwining Corbulo with the imperial family. But Nero, already distrusted of military men, grew increasingly jealous and afraid of Corbulo's influence and reputation, especially as other generals began to stir unrest.
He wanted like, to marry my cousin for himself. That's what it was. He was like, that cousin that we married off is pretty hot. I kind of want me some of that. Corbulo's daughter marrying that? Nope.
I was planning on having a threesome with my boy wife and my cousin, and you just ended that for me, Corbulo. I just see him sitting in his fucking fucking throne, just sitting there going, Corbulo. Like Jerry and Newman.
Like what?
Like Jerry. Hello, Jerry. Hello, Corbulo.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Seinfeld.
Oh, no, I don't really, never really watched an awful lot of Seinfeld. Didn't really like it too much.
Now,
that's about as much as he
does. You know they did a different theme for every single episode?
I didn't know that.
It was never the same. Yeah, it was never the guy who did the theme sat on a bass and he would watch the beginning of the show and he would do the bass line as it fit the show for each episode. Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That's your fun
Bet
fact.
Bet he wasn't as good of a musician as Nero was.
Probably not. He probably didn't have 1,800 fucking crowns and trophies just sitting around.
All them Grammys. Of...
I won these Grammys by torture. I have the Grammy panel lit in flames in my garden to light it at night.
Nice.
Fucking weirdo. Now, Corbulo had done nothing wrong, but his popularity, discipline, and heroic imagery made him intolerable to a ruler who sought absolute control and personal glory. In 67 AD, Nero summoned Corbulo under the pretense of consultation. When Corbulo arrived, he was met by soldiers who presented him with a sword and a death order, which, with characteristic Roman stoicism, Corbulo fell on his own sword, reportedly saying only, "Axios," or "I am worthy." Now, this sent shockwaves through the military and aristocracy, signaling that even loyal service was not protection under Nero. He began heavily taxing the provinces for elaborate and financially draining architectural projects, confiscating estates from wealthy Roman citizens on made-up charges of treason, diverting funds from things like soldiers' salaries and frontier defense, melting down religious statues, and temple offerings. Now, all the things that he had done before, everybody's like, this is ridiculous, but, you know, it is what it is. But now he starts fucking with people's money. Soldiers aren't getting paid. Wealthy people are having all their estates and money taken from them.
Imagine that. It's like, so this Nero guy, you know, he's killing women, children, raping people, burned down half the city, fucking every member of his family, murdering everybody else, killing this, taking his best friend's wife.
Yeah.
Killing anybody who's actually in any way close to him. And everybody's like, ah, it's okay. He's raising tax by 2%. Get him! No! Son of a bitch!
Fucker must die!
Yeah. God.
He took my summer home. I still have my winter home and my autumn home, but he took our summer home. We must kill the bastard. So many said enough was enough. One such person was the Romanized Gaelic noble and governor of Gallia Luginensis, or Central Gaul, Gaius Julius Vindex, who in early 68 AD openly rebelled against Nero, issuing a public proclamation denouncing Nero as corrupt, immoral, and unfit to rule, calling upon other governors to join him in restoring liberty to Rome. Now, this little uprising didn't succeed militarily speaking. Loyal legions marched south, and Vindex was killed. However, like most major historical events, one small thing leads to much bigger things.
I mean, like because the spark even though that started that fire, this time it's a figurative one, not a literal one.
Yeah, exactly.
God, we've gone full circle yet again.
I'm glad, man. You pay attention. Glad. No, because even though Vindex was put down, his idea wasn't. His actions and message had reached Spain, where a more serious threat to Nero was forming. In April of 68, Severus Sulpicius Galba, that's exactly what I thought too. Always. Always. Do you hate Nero? Always. Can you say anything other than always? He's just him walking around his palace. Always! The respected governor of Hispania Tarraconensis, Spain, after calculating the strength of the discontent within the empire, formally declared rebellion and proclaiming himself as legate of the Senate and people of Rome, a proclamation that was both anti-Nero and pro-Senate, which attracted support from other provinces.
Please tell me that signage that said near no on it.
Near no.
Yeah.
Near no to near bro. Just, near no yeah, to near bro. Bro. Just everybody in togas just chanting outside the palace with little signs made out of parchment.
What do we want? Near now. When do we want it?
Now. We want it. Near now. Near now. Now, initially, Nero dismissed the uprising, more concerned with finishing a musical competition and preparing for a new round of performances. Oh, I don't. They want to do what to me? Oh, I don't care. I need to finish rehearsing Rockstar.
Yeah. He's catching up on Annie,
get your
marathon.
Gun.
That's what it was.
We're gonna be performing Hello Dolly next week, and I gotta get that solo down. By early June, news had reached him that Gaul and Spain had both turned against him. The Praetorian Guard was being courted by Galba's envoys, and many in the Senate were secretly in contact with the self-proclaimed legate. So on the 8th of June, Galba was officially declared a public enemy by Nero. In turn, the Senate declared Nero a public enemy on the 9th. The same day, the Praetorian Guard abandoned him.
Nice.
So you see, it's all coming. There it is. It's all coming to an end. Again, something that we can hope for in the near future. The next day, Nero woke to find his palace almost completely deserted. No guards, no senators, very few friends and supporters. So Nero panicked and, in disguise with a few remaining freedmen, including Sporus, he hopped on a horse and rode through the night. He looked everywhere for asylum, but none of his former loyalists would take him in. Fucking, you love me today, you hate me tomorrow.
Yeah.
Fucking fair weather friends. Yeah. Finally.
Just to be honest,
supposed to be my friend.
He probably like slept with all their wives and stuff and murdered her. It's like,
you raped my wife.
Yeah.
You raped my wife.
What do you want me to do about it?
What? You're still harping on that. It was like a week ago. Get over it. She's fine. How's the baby, by the way? Finally, he was taken to a small villa outside Rome, where he hid in a storeroom, spending his night cowering in filth as he listened for the military to show up. He talked obsessively of how the world would mourn his death and how he would be remembered as a great artist and how his performance might live on. Just being insufferable. I mean, yes, I did horrible things, but I was such an artist. How will the world go on without me? You will all. He's one of those. You'll all miss me when I'm gone.
And they're all just sitting there, dumb mother, waiting with bated breath for somebody to finally put them out of their misery, too. And poor little fucking Spore sitting there like, I miss my penis.
You'll miss me when I'm gone. You know what I miss now that it's gone?
Yeah, yeah.
He just looks up at him with those big doe eyes. My penis.
So yeah, you think you got a bad... You got your penis.
Yes, yes. Your penis is gone. But I mean, the world, what will you do without me? Just.
Do you remember what it's like to lose your penis? Pepperidge Farm remembers.
What is going on over at Pepperidge Farm? The freedman, probably sick of hearing him talk about himself, began suggesting that he take his own life. Oh, what will the world do without me? You know, you should probably just...
Kill yourself.
You know.
Near bro.
Yes, I could, but what about the world? I mean, we'd be okay. We'd
manage somehow.
It's true. It's true. You will. But what about the world?
We'll write epic songs about you, Nero. We'll write epic songs about you. And one day,
epic songs,
you'll get covered on the number one hit podcast about torture that is called Torture.
And that is done by a Midwesterner and Irishman. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Nero agreed but stalled, telling them to dig him a grave and prepare a bath for him so that they could clean his body afterwards, but then being fussy about the temperature of the water.
They were just going to piss on him. I don't think it mattered. So
make sure you clean my body in this. Let me test it.
Except for Spore.
Tepid water. My God, I simply cannot commit suicide in these kinds of conditions. Start a fire, warm some water. It should be
medium tepid.
I don't know if they have Fahrenheit and Celsius back then. It should be as warm as a late spring day. Not an early summer day, Sporus. There is a difference. And if you can't see that, then I don't know why we're even together.
You don't know me at all.
It's too hot. That feels like July. I'm looking for maybe April. Pretty much, God.
That would not surprise me if that was the exact conversation.
Yeah. What a man! It's Porus is like, but I missed my penis.
Obviously,
yes, yeah, obviously. Now, pretty much anything he could do to delay the inevitable. Spending this time crying and rambling, quote, "Qualis artifex pero," or "What an artist the world is losing in me." Just insufferable.
We feel so much worse without you.
Yeah. Don't worry. Another incarnation of him has come about and sits in the White House right now. So eventually, we're really beating that to death, but it's true. Eventually.
Take every opportunity I can.
Every time we can. And I bet if you went up to his face and called him the next Nero, he'd probably be like, great guy, huge. Yeah. Huge guy. Amazing man. Did great things for Rome. Burnt it to the ground. Best thing ever happened to it. Had a little boy, wife, little boy. It's what I want to do to Eric, little Eric. Not Don Jr., he's my favorite, but Eric. I can do that to Eric. Eventually, a messenger arrived with word that the Senate had declared him a public enemy and that soldiers were approaching to arrest him alive so he could be taken to the forum and beaten to death in public, which would just be great for everybody. Now, Nero asked those around him to help him die, but none of them would.
You'd be first on the line right there. But like, would one of you guys, yes.
You? So you gotta imagine Sporus is like, I know where to start.
Yeah. How about the hedge trimmers?
Oh, God. For some reason, anything that has blades that close together is worse than just like a knife. Like, if you think of cutting yourself with a knife, it sucks. But you think you're like cutting yourself with scissors? Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
You whip out ye old crocodile shears. How about you?
There you go. That's a callback, ladies and gentlemen. Now, until finally, Epaphroditus, a freedman and former secretary, which sounds like a skin condition.
All Latin names do, because it's all medical stuff is based on Latin. Half the stuff you've said to me, I've thought was either an illness or some sort of salve for an illness or something like that. You know, like, there's some seriously horrific sounding names.
I'm just going to be sitting on the couch watching TV, and I'll a commercial for like a prescription drug's going to come on and be like, didn't we cover them on the last episode?
Wasn't that syphilis erectus that we were talking about the other day?
Do you suffer from Epaphroditus? That's the guy who killed Nero. He was a freedman and former secretary, helped him drive a dagger into his throat. Now, this didn't immediately kill him. He was still alive enough to let out a scream, which I imagine was like Ned Flanders.
This exactly the exact thing I thought of immediately.
It's the first thing I thought of when I wrote it. I was like, oh, it's got to be Ned Flanders. Which alerted the arriving soldiers of where he was. They burst into the room just in time to hear his final words, quote, "Who qualis fidelitas," or fidelitas, "too late, this is fidelity." So on June 11th, 68 AD, at the ripe old age of 30, with no heir or plan of succession and the end of the Julio-Claudian dynasty, Lucius Domitius Anhobarbarus, a.k.a. Nero Claudius Caesar Drusus Germanicus, finally did the best thing he could and died. He finally did something great.
His last name should have been Over Dramaticus. That's what it should have been. Over Dramaticus.
Episode 2. Yeah. Electric Boogaloo. This time it's personal. His body cremated and buried at Pincian Hill.
Set it alight with all that piss all over it.
Yeah, no
it's
shit.
Like guaranteed that body was saturated by the time it got there.
Oh, I can't imagine the things they did to that fucking body. Sporus alone. Yeah. Is he dead? We must cremate him. Can you wait like 10 minutes?
Take off a few pieces from him.
I have something I need to do. He just cuts it off. He puts it on himself. He's like, it's back. Shaking it around. It's back.
It's about a quarter the size it used to be, but it's back.
It's so small. Now, cremated and buried at Pincian Hill by a few loyal freedmen, including his boy wife, Sporus, and his former girlfriend, Claudia Acti. I called her Claudia Act in the first episode. I got her name wrong. It was Acti. Without honors. It's actually said that Claudia paid for the cremation and the burial herself. She was with him through this entire thing. She was kind of, we don't really talk about her except for the first, few minutes of the first episode. But she was one of the very few constants he had through this entire time. Well, she was just kind of there for support. Almost like a therapist. He could go talk to her. And, There's a therapist he would have sex with whenever he felt like it. But she was with him through the whole thing.
I now, found the ugliest picture I caught of him.
Of him?
I found a really picture of him. That's actually a statue.
It's easy to find a bad picture of him. It's hard to find the worst. Because
I thought this one was pretty bad. But like,
it's not great. I don't know. I think the ones with the chin beard or the neck beard are the worst.
Made a new word. It's called equalize.
It's a word I invented. I'm an artist. I like to sing. Now, this would throw the empire into chaos, culminating in the year of four emperors, which would, ironically enough, include his old friend, Brotho! By his husband, who would serve as emperor for a short time in 69 AD. He actually took in Sporus and had him continued to be treated publicly as a woman. Then when Otho was replaced by Roman general and politician Aulus Vitellus later that year, when he took his army and marched against Otho, pushing him out of power and forcing our poor Brotho to kill himself, it was reported that Vitellus had planned to use Sporus in a public performance where he would play Persephone being raped by Pluto.
Cool.
Faced with this horrifying fate.
The role of a lifetime.
Sporus committed suicide. And you got to remember, Sporus is only at this time is only between like 16 and 20. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's not great. Poor Sporus. Now, faced with Sporus committed suicide. Vitellus would actually be seen as the new Nero, and after only 8 months on the throne, would be dragged through the streets of Rome, beaten, mocked, and tortured to death. He would be taken to Gemonius Stairs, where many disgraced figures were executed and killed publicly. His body was thrown into the Tiber, a dishonorable end and a symbolic of complete disgrace. Now, as for Tigellinus, kind of the man behind the man, Galba, who took the throne first after Nero's death, removed him from power and the Senate demanded his execution. However, Galba spared him, reportedly because Tigellinus had helped him restrain the guard during the transition, though many scholars think that he actually bribed or blackmailed his way out of the death sentence for a while. When Vitellus came into power, Tigellinus was officially accused by the Senate and condemned to death. And in late 69 AD, Tigellinus, much like his cash cow emperor, slit his own throat.
Did he, though?
Tigellinus didn't commit suicide. Signs all over the place. Release the Tigellinus
papers. Yeah, report files, yeah. God, they're awful.
And all the emperors are like, no, don't do that. You don't need to. Just forget about it. It's fine.
Yeah. We will release the papers. We will release them. Once I become the new Caesar, I will release the papers. Get in.
Yeah.
What papers? I do not know the papers.
You guys just... If you guys are going to want these papers, just don't support me. Just fine. Just forget about it. Move on. I don't even know who this Tigellinus guy was. Pictures of those two together all over the place.
The head of RIB, the Roman Intelligence Bureau, sitting there going, we have the files. They're on my desk. I'm going to read them on Tuesday. Wednesday comes around. I don't know what files you're talking about.
What files are you talking about? They just fired my daughter. Dan, any pop culture? I know we covered a little bit in the first episode. You got any more pop culture?
Absolutely tons of stuff, really. There's graphic novels, The Adventures of Nero, which I'm sure is an absolutely amazing read.
Yeah. Probably.
Many artists, stuff like Salvador Dali has a painting. It's pretty famous. I didn't even know it was a thing to do with Nero. Oh, you're frozen on my side. Can you still hear me?
You froze up a little bit. Oh, you've been freezing off and on my side, yeah.
So are you as well, yeah. So I make sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the last thing
your internet connection is unstable.
Dali. Much like my mental health. Let me see. There is the Nero AG, which is a software company that had their pictogram of Rome burning. That's their thing.
Not what I would want to name my software company after, but okay.
There was a video game out years ago, Rise, Son of Rome, which was really good. And Nero is in it as the antagonist.
Oh.
So
that fits.
Yeah. There's also several movies.
Yeah.
Like quite a lot of movies. Yeah.
Right.
See You Later, Gladiator is one of them. It's fucking brilliant. I'd love to see a recreation of Dude, Where's My Car? But it's near Bro and Brozo.
Yeah.
And that would just be so fucking funny.
Dudicus. Sweaty Tony. Dudicus. Sweaty Tony.
Oh, that'd be great. There's been loads and loads of shit.
There's been a lot of stuff.
There's a song called Nero's Liar by some guy who I've never heard of.
Taylor Swift?
I say it. Some guy called Michael Sumter that has a song called Nero's Liar. And it's six minutes of him playing Liar. I don't really want to listen to it.
Just Christian to it screaming in the background as they're set on fire.
It's not a nice instrument.
The lyre? The lyre?
Yeah. It sounds like a poor man's... but the song that he was playing there sounded a bit like Nothing Else Matters for a second.
Oh, okay.
But, shit. There's also the band Nero. They were a British electronic music trio.
Oh.
They were shit. I remember them as soon as I saw it. But other than that, there's loads of art.
It's not hip-hop, it's techno. Movies.
Yeah. Shakespeare references him quite a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. About 3 times, to be exact. Across a few different things. So, look, that's quite a lot of references from one person.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if Shakespeare had a thing. Mm. Anyway, thank you to our patrons, Willa Quinn Fowler and Sam Beers. You can sign up as patreon.com/torturepod, 1 week of our cult leader tier for free. Connect with us on the socials at torturepod, email torturepod@gmail.com, buymeacoffee.com/torturepod, donate redbubble.com/people/torturepod. For the merch, all Pride merch profits donated to the Trevor Project. Go rate, review, wherever you can. And thank you to our sponsors. You can support us by supporting them. Hint, for our next episode, we're just going to hang out. Literally.
Nice.
Dan, any words of wisdom?
I completely forgot to prepare for this. So,
first thing that pops into your head.
Oh, I already said about not fucking your best friend's bro's sister last week, didn't I?
General
rule of thumb is don't marry an underage boy to replace your wife and then cut off their penis. Don't murder hundreds of people, burn down the entire city, and then dare tax people and expect them to like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you do horrible things, don't think that the world is going to worry about what happened to you after you're gone. The world's not losing an artist in you. We'll be fine.
Well, put it this way, Hitler isn't known for his paintings, is he?
No.
And apparently he was good. But he's not known for that.
I've seen a couple pictures of some of his paintings. He was okay. He was never going to be a famous painter. He was okay.
Well, look, nobody needed fucking art school back when Leonardo da Vinci was doing his shit, did they? Like, that whole thing,
true.
Oh my god, his stuff is mediocre. It's crap. It's better than anything I could ever do, but...
No, I would imagine that if you started painting. Like, if you started practicing and really paying attention to what you're doing, I bet within a year you could paint better than Hitler.
Tell you what, one thing I couldn't do better than him.
Genocide?
Yep. I mean, exactly the word I was thinking.
Say all the horrible things about Hitler you want, but he knew how to do one thing really well.
Yep.
He
always had a final solution.
Overcompensated. Yeah. Overcompensated. Oh, shit.
You can go visit the tomb and the remains of Nero's villa.
Yeah.
There's still some of it left. We can go to the tomb in Rome. It's closed at the moment, apparently, for a while. But they were doing work.
Ironically enough, they're probably doing some type of construction.
Yeah.
So that's okay. Yeah. And if you want to go visit the Domus Aurora. Or Aura, or however it's pronounced. Pretty much just go to all of Rome because it covered the whole fucking city.
Oh, so yeah, well, that's kind of what I meant. But you know, there are sections of it still remaining near, right next to the Colosseum that you can go to.
It was like most of it was demolished and it was covered up and then it was refound in during the Renaissance.
Yeah, you can see that the domey thing, what looks like that hall in part of it too. Which is pretty cool. Yeah, I'm assuming that's the hall. But, so if you want to go and you want to pee on Nero's grave, you can do it by the looks of things. You wouldn't be able to get close enough to it, but...
Why not? They should let people just go up to Nero's grave and piss on it. Just put a toilet right there. Put the piping right down through where his ashes are. Fuck that guy.
That would be so fucking funny. Oof.
It would be.
So yeah, that's my word of wisdom for you now, guys. Go piss on Nero's grave.
Go piss on Nero's grave. There you go. Ah, shit. All right. Hope everybody enjoyed the little series. We'll get back to our normally scheduled torture stuff next time. Okay. Take care of yourselves and take care of each other. We'll see you.
Ciao, bella. I'm going to say to everybody what Spore said to his penis. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Today's episode is brought to you by podup.com.
Let's be honest, whether you want to admit it or not, you've probably thought at some point to start a podcast. I mean, podcasts are fun. You and I have a good time on here, Dan.
Just get on, talk junk.
Yeah. I mean, it's some dark content. What we're talking about isn't necessarily fun, but we make it fun. We have a good time. And we would never even met each other if it wasn't for podcasts. So,
that's true. Podcasts and Canadians.
Podcasts and Canadians. Little D&D thrown in there. I mean, change your life.
Well, there are about 5 million podcasts out there, and around 90% of those stop after just 3 episodes. That's including about 1.8 million that stop before they even start, which we know a thing or two about that, though, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, we do, unfortunately.
Quite a few still on the drawing room floor.
And of those that do get started and pass that 3 episode mark, about 90% of those don't get past 20 episodes. And there's a reason. Podcasting is hard. Well, successful podcasting is hard.
Yeah, it's not just sitting in front of a microphone and talking for an hour. Though sometimes that's what it is for me. It's recording, audio editing, video editing, social media, promotion, blah, 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 all the stuff that Kevin does.
And I do. And finding and paying for all the software to use can be just as big of a headache, not to mention expensive.
Well, with PodUp,
you can have a one-stop shop for everything you need to take your podcast to the next level.
With 35 powerful modules with AI integration and one software, you can create, publish, grow, monetize, and manage your podcast with a simple, easy-to-use interface.
Everything from a site builder and recorder to editing for video and audio, live streams, blogs, and transcriptions.
Legal, newsletters, SEO.
Setting up shops, getting ads and sponsorships.
Managing your workflow, files, and even backing up your content.
Set up an account today and get 14 days free. And even schedule a demo with one of PodUp's podcasting experts to see how to start producing and monetizing your very own podcast.
And when you're ready, use our exclusive coupon code TORTURE15 for 15% off whichever package you decide to go with.
And if you're a professional that's even too busy for that, go to podallies.com.
Yeah, their done-for-you podcast production and marketing service will take care of the dirty work for you.
Dirty. We're talking websites, social media, editing work, SEO, all done for you. So you can just focus on being the star of the show, like me, and getting on with your day, unlike Kevin, who has to do all the work.
That's why everybody comes, is for Dan. And this team of experts will use PodUp software to put your podcast on the map where it belongs. See, just they're using PodUp software. It's all one big circle. It's coming all, it's always coming back around.
Like opposite of a square.
That's right.
So go to podup.com and podallies.com and use our coupon torture15 for 15% off. That's TORTURE15 for 15% off.
podup.com, the ultimate podcasting platform.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.